At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Patreon, I know that you're ad-free, but we are just so excited about this that we had to share it with everyone. Recently, Amy and I, Caitlin, and a couple of our friends did a wine tasting. And we did 10 things everyone should know about wine.
And it was by Zoom.
Yes, it was all virtual. And we had it hosted by Couch and Cork, who we wanted to try it out. And it was so much fun that we asked them to work with us for a discount code for you guys. The way that it worked for us is we all brought our own wines. They sent us all these customized food and menu pairings and like things you can make to eat while we're having this class.
Yes.
It was not snobby at all. They are crazy educated.
They've been doing this for years. They're professionals and they work with so many people.
And not only are they internationally certified, they're women owned. They were so fun. Like I really felt like I learned a ton.
Yes. So I learned two awesome things. So let me start off by letting you know that a few summers ago, I visited all of or nearly all of the Connecticut vineyards here and was what I thought educated really well about the wines that we had to offer here in Connecticut. But let me tell you, I learned so much more about wine, from the types of grape to the reasons for the shapes of the bottle.
Yes. And not for nothing, it would, like I said, it wasn't snobby at all, but it was super approachable. And Caitlin found out tons about vegan wine.
Yes.
And it was just, for me, I thought it was super fun.
And you know what? The best part is these ladies will remain in touch with you and they're open to communication of all sorts after.
Yes, they are. And it's called the Friend of a Fam, which means you get access to their texting service.
One night, very shortly after our event, I opened a bottle of wine and it exploded. No lie. And I was like, I don't think that's right. And I don't feel like it's good wine to drink. I texted them, no lie. Within 15 minutes, they texted me back and gave me all the information on not just why it happened, but is it safe to drink?
Yes. And like if you're shopping, you can text them, hey, I'm making this dinner. What wine should I buy? And they will respond with what to do. It is the coolest service I've ever heard. And it's woman owned and it's interactive. And I think everyone should do it with their friends. Because of that, we got a discount code. All right. You're going to go to couchandcork.com/DTRH. The code is DTRH, like down the rabbit holes. You get more than $50 off the 10 things everybody should know about wine tasting. And you can invite as many people as you want.
Yes, right from your own couch.
Yes. So, yes, Patreon, you're ad-free, and we are sorry, but we are so excited about this that everyone is hearing about it.
Absolutely. Check it out.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. Let me just tell you that this case is kind of back to my norm. I stepped outside my comfort zone and I took those late 2000s cases, but you know where I'm going to go back to.
Yes, I do. Because you know what? This is why we don't tell each other the cases ahead of time. Amy told me 45 minutes ago. I've already read a Reddit page and an article because this case is bonkers. So I'm so excited to hear it because I stopped half the Reddit page and I was like, okay, I need Amy to just tell me the story.
Melissa, you've read too much. Shame on you.
I've only read, just tell me the story though, because I'm excited now.
Well, I'm glad it like psychs you up and gets you, you know, like into it.
Yeah.
All right then. I will jump on in. So the case I'm going to tell you about is the case of William and Margaret Patterson. And it was just a stumble on the Charlie Project. No big wow about how I was working on another case and came upon this one. It is just going through names. And it's just kind of near and dear to my heart to cover old cases. And yes, that's absolutely true that not one case means more than another case by any means. But I understand, you know, these older cases go cold. We don't have the technology and things like that. They just are at a standstill and people are very less than optimistic about the probability of them being solved. But I think of all the cases that I've heard where someone says something about something they heard from somebody in the past or something like that. And man, it would just take one person to hear something that makes their ears perk and say, wow, I wonder if this could be something. And you never know. It might be a needle in a haystack, but it's worth it. If something happened to a sibling of mine or a family member and 50 years later down the line, we didn't know anything, I wouldn't want the public to forget about that person. Just because time has passed doesn't make their life any less significant.
I agree 100%.
All right. So I'm going to jump on in and take you back to the 50s.
Okay.
So little is known about Margaret and William Patterson prior to them residing in El Paso, Texas in the 1950s. What we do know about William still surpasses what we know about Margaret. The information that has come to fruition over the years is only through determination rather than historical information provided by friends, for example.
Okay.
Which I just find so fascinating because some of the first things that I say when I meet people is, where are you from? Tell me about your family. Tell me about your childhood. Where'd you go to school? Things like that. Keeping in mind that higher education wasn't something that everyone pursued, I think it's a standard question, no matter the historical time period, to ask someone like, where are you from?
It's kind of like, what do you do for work? Like, it's conversation.
Yes. I guess I'm just surprised that the friends in this couple's life, or their lives, were like, nope, don't know any of that. And it was fine with us.
Yeah, I'm too nosy for that.
But different times, maybe people were hush-hush. So friends recall knowing the couple, but not being sure how William and Margaret met, when they married, or even how old or when Margaret's birthday was. I think friends safely said they knew they were from the Chicago area, or at least that's where they had come from before they moved to El Paso. But that's it. And I just find that, like,
baffling,
mind-boggling. Oh, yes, totally. So through investigation, we now know that Margaret Patterson was born Margaret Kiefer or Keffer. We're still unsure of her birth date. Never got that. It is known that they likely met in the Chicago area. Margaret was originally from Kentucky. I think she might have moved someplace after that, but ended up in that area where we think she met William and either started dating or seriously considering marriage. And her family disapproved of the relationship. They inevitably kind of wanted her to make a choice. It's either him or us. She chose him, and this caused a rift and really eventually an estrangement. As a matter of fact, after Margaret left with William, her family assumed she was dead.
Hold on. So she just left with her husband, which is fine. But then her family was like, okay, she's passed away?
Well, it seems to me that this relationship came to an abrupt halt. She left with him, and it wasn't like they wrote each other once a year or made a phone call here and there. It was like, we're not talking again. Our relationship is over. So I don't think they went a year and thought she had passed away. But I think after not hearing from her for several years, they might have thought she passed away. That maybe she was being stubborn after all that time and passed away. And, you know, it's harder to get information. If someone leaves town with no forwarding address or anything, they could be anywhere in the world.
Right. No, I hear you.
Like I said, there was no further contact made, and that's where that ended. William's father was found, and it was determined that William worked at a carnival. He wasn't making much money. I don't think he came from a lot of money. But he was very committed to making a life for himself, being able to support himself and being well off. His father eventually said that it was very much in his nature to disappear and alluded to him doing this before. So this sounds like it was an interview or some line of questioning after the disappearance, and that his father was not in the least bit surprised that William would or could do something like this.
That's weird, but okay.
Right. So although we don't know when the couple moved to El Paso and why, it appears to me at least that they were there for some significant time, as William was able to achieve his dream of making money and having a career. William owned a photo supply business, which afforded him a home, his home, a nice car, a second home, a boat, stock in a boating company, and property in Mexico. I know a photo supply company might not sound like a big deal to you, but this is when cameras were becoming a little bit more readily available to people. And being that that is the only way to document things in any real time, this was lucrative. People wanted it, and business, at least how I would imagine it, was booming. The couple had friends, and they were well-liked. People kind of said that William was boisterous to a degree, and you could tell that he had money, but he was still, nevertheless, a nice guy. A few days before the disappearance of William and Margaret, they had their friend Cecil, or Cecil, and his wife over for dinner. Both appeared to be in a good mood. The men adjourned to the garage after dinner to lacquer a boat together, which was William's boat, and they actually made plans for later in the week together. So nothing is awry, nothing seems off. Any typical night with friends. On March 6th of 1957, Cecil was at his business, which was a car garage, when an acquaintance driving William's Cadillac pulls into the parking lot, and this was Doyle Kirkland. Doyle Kirkland was known as a good friend to William, but also William's pretty much single competitor in the region. He owned his own photo supply business, and as much as they were competitors, they were good friends by all accounts. Anyway, Doyle mentions that he wants William's car serviced.
That's weird.
Cecil thought that Cecil thought this was strange. And even though Doyle explained it away as doing a favor for a friend while he's out of town, he still thought it was weird, and also reflected on their dinner from the other night where they made plans together for later in the week, and there was no mention of going on any vacation or getaway. This is a little bit confusing because some sources say that this prompted Cecil to feel so uncomfortable that he called the police. But I've also seen other sources say that it was business associates, even weeks or months later, that hadn't had contact with William and or Margaret and eventually phoned the police because they couldn't get into contact with them. But Nevertheless, by March 15th, the accountant for William and Margaret received a telegram with instructions on what to do with the assets of William and Margaret, such as...
Wait, what?
Renting out their... Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So such as renting out their home, selling their second home to keep their business afloat, and to leave Doyle Kirkland, who I just mentioned, in charge of their business. It was signed W.H. Patterson. But those are not the initials of William Patterson. H is not his middle initial. So this was obviously weird. Regardless, this was void as there was no witness to the signing of this telegram. You have to have a witness watch you sign some document like that that tells you about what you're doing with your assets. And also, Margaret's signature is missing, and she co-owned all of these assets. So it was essentially ineffective. Nothing could be done with it. Investigators were only able to determine that the telegram originated from an airport that was kind of nearby. But beyond that, they weren't able to determine anything more about the origin of that. The investigation found several interesting things while looking into the couple. One interesting thing, aside from how bizarre it is that no one knows anything about the past of these two people to a large degree, they were able to determine that William had a mistress.
Wait.
Who was, in fact, 20. Yes.
Okay, keep going.
Who was, in fact, 20 and lived in Mexico. Now, I'm just going to not sugarcoat this and say that I'm pretty sure William was about 52 when he went missing. 52 and 20, I get it. Today we call that creepy or whatever. And maybe back then it was more widely accepted. Whatever. But I just can't still wrap my head around that. She's a kid with essentially someone that, I don't know. Whatever. That's my opinion and there's nothing more to it. But... she actually alluded to seeing William on March 6th and that he said he might leave abruptly because they might be coming for him. Funny thing is, she ended up recanting that statement, so that really went absolutely nowhere. Other statements from people who had witnessed him and his mistress together before remembered a night of them dining where she was denied service at whatever restaurant they were at, and William wanted to argue or fight. And I guess this just seems surprising about his character. I guess people just didn't see him doing it. I don't know that they ever thought that there was anything wrong in the marriage, that he would have had a mistress. Nevertheless, that's coming from several different accounts. It was also determined that on the day of the disappearance, Girl Scouts visited the Patterson home, and they found that Margaret appeared to be upset, and William seemed to be kind of disgruntled to have any visitors at his doorstep. Neighbors also noticed unusual activity coming from the Patterson home on the night of the 5th. When police entered the home, they found that much was in disarray. There were dirty dishes, clothes out on the bed, furs were tucked away. Stuff was at the cleaners with no instructions. There was no plans for the cat, who was, by all accounts, beloved by Margaret. They did not cancel their mail, you know, under the assumption that if they had gone away, they didn't cancel their newspaper service or any of their utilities.
And is disarray, like it was ransacked, or disarray like it was just lived in?
Lived in and abruptly left.
Okay.
Like, things just were left out that you'd think would be very easy to put away, is the impression that I got from that description. There have been many sightings over the years. They've gone to Mexico to talk to or follow up on these leads of sightings where people, yes, have identified that they've seen them. But beyond that, there's been no actual proof that these were actual accurate sightings of the couple. In 1984, there was a person that came forward and stated that he, in fact, was involved in the cleanup of a crime that occurred in the home, which he can only assume was the murder of the couple. He mentioned seeing blood-soaked sheets, skull fragments attached to the propeller of William's boat. Some pretty graphic details from that. That was documented. Unfortunately, he passed away 2 years after that in a car accident. So while we do have that on record as what he said, there's no way we can ever follow up on the accuracy of that or if he can provide any other information. So like I said, you know, there have been sightings over the years. There have been, you know, like this example of someone coming forward. But other than that, people are pretty clueless as to what happened, why it happened. And I mean, we know when it happened, but really, like, if they left and something happened later, we don't know the when of that either. So today, William would be around the age of 117. So he's 99% past, regardless of if he lived his life out somewhere. And I know that Margaret was about 10 years his junior, so it's likely that she has passed as well. So the only thing that we have is potential remains someday that would tell us what happened, or someone coming forward with information and evidence from something in somebody's past. So the theories are that something happened in the home. Someone came in, surprised them, either harmed them there, and that person that came forward was accurate in that they cleaned up a crime scene. That they left of their own free will. Maybe they were scared of something. Maybe they knew they were in trouble or something like that. They left their life. They were done with it for whatever reason. One very interesting theory that it says is not widely accepted. However, I find it in everything that I read. Take that for what you, for whatever. Is that perhaps that they were spies. And that's why we don't know much about them. That is why they left abruptly. And that's why they've never been found.
But wouldn't his dad have said, like, what his birthday was and what hell that is?
Well, we'll go back to that in a second. I'll just tell you kind of the last theory that we have here is, did Kirkland have anything to do with their death or missing status? So that's pretty much it. Where do you want to dive in?
Okay, so the spy theory, right? I mean, his dad may not have known he was a spy, but he would have been able to give, like, his date of birth and his history.
Well, we do know William's date of birth.
Okay.
And like I said, we do know a little bit more about his history than we do Margaret's. That for sure is true, but that doesn't exclude you from being a spy just because you have a history. I mean, you can get involved with anything as a young adult and basically give your life up to another entity.
All right, so let's go to the guy that came forward in 1984.
Okay.
Tell me more about him. What do we know?
Well, he said that the reason he hadn't come forward before was that he was here in the United States illegally and he feared deportation. I can only assume that for whatever reason his legal status was safe, or he knew that disclosing what he thought could be a crime was something they wouldn't go after him or his status for anyway. But that is his reasoning, and he basically said that he was hired on to go clean up a crime scene, and he identified that it was the Patterson's home, and he recalled seeing bloody sheets, well, excuse me, it's kind of graphic, but skull fragments in the garage of the home.
Okay. And does he know who hired him? Does he give him information about that?
I don't recall the statement going into detail about who hired him for it or how long after they were declared missing. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, that gives me a little bit of, like, so you were hired, who paid you? You know what I mean? Like,
yes, and in the articles and a couple of YouTubes that I watched, I didn't see any explicit details about that. Does that mean investigators didn't ask those questions? No, it doesn't. But for whatever reason, we don't have that information.
Right. All right. And then tell me again about this fax or telegraph.
The telegram?
Yes.
So the telegram was sent to the accountant of William and Margaret. And it was sent within a week or so.
Can we stop there? So it's someone that knew the accountant, unless they were like the registered agent for the business or all that, right?
Sure.
Okay, so it's... Go ahead.
Well, they received this telegram that says, this is what we want you to do with the assets. We're not returning, in essence. And this is how you should handle things. If you're looking for this to make sense, it doesn't to me.
Well, no, I was going to say, does it seem to align with what they would have wanted done?
Sell our or rent out our house. Sell our second home.
Well, that would imply they were coming back.
I mean, maybe. They want their business kept afloat, but if they're not coming back, what would they care? And if there's no way to funnel them money from the proceeds of the business, why would you want anything to do with it?
Who was going to be the recipient of all that money?
That I have not read. But things were left to Kirkland. So I don't know if that also means...
The competitor. Although he's a friend, he's also right. The competitor.
I mean, I'm not going to dance around it. I mean, most people, when they read that, this is the whole reason why Kirkland comes into the equation of maybe he had something to do with it because he's explicitly named.
And he brought the car in, right?
He brought the car in, yes. And I guess it just doesn't make any sense. And then lastly, when... it comes down to a signature, the initials are wrong.
But it would make sense that Kirkland would know who the accountant is if they've talked business.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, man. And then tell me about leaving their life. Like his dad, what did his dad say?
He never specifically gave an instance of how it might have occurred. But he didn't seem surprised at the idea of his son doing this and even alluded to the fact that he has done things like this before.
Like left his life?
That's a great question. That's kind of what I asked.
Oh, yeah. He does that all the time. He leaves his
life.
Maybe
he means left for extended periods of time.
Okay. So what are your thoughts?
I thought a lot about this because this has all of the makings of some historical drama, right? Like the Russian spies go and live in Texas and they build this false life and then they disappear, you know, on to the next type thing. When I get out of that headspace, I'm like, okay, that's probably not it. That's not a Mr. and Mrs.
Right.
Smith thing, right? I would have to say that we're looking at a pretty boring life. You know, these aren't people that are, well, maybe they are, I don't know. But these are people that aren't, you know, doing these illegal activities to gain all their money. They have a lucrative business. So they're not setting themselves up for territorial wars and things like that. It's probably someone that's jealous or threatened by what's going on, by their business.
Do you think the person that came forward and said they cleaned up the blood is credible?
Great question. And I guess I don't know how I feel. I don't know.
Because that, for me, is the differentiator, right? Like, if I think this person that came forward is credible, then they died in the home.
I don't think there's enough information. As an investigator, I want to know, did you live in the El Paso area in any way, shape, or form in the 1950s? Who were your acquaintances? What types of other jobs were you signing up to do? If this was your first job out of the gate and you're cleaning up a crime scene, then you probably did others. Why are you only disclosing information about this one? How much did you make? Did you make money? Because that tells me something too.
Let me ask you this. I'm on the Reddit, obviously. And there's a theory of William killed his wife and went on the run.
Actually, now that you mention it, that was one of the first theories I read. And when I first came across the case, I thought it was a case of a family annihilator. And that piqued my interest because we only really recognize family annihilators sparsely through time, but more recently in like the last 20 years or so, give or take some. So, yes, I mean, that could definitely be something. And what, he went off with his mistress? Well, I looked into that and who knows? We didn't follow up with her. He owned property in Mexico. What happened to that? I don't know. They were declared legally dead 7 years later, so something was done with all of this. Because when you do that, things don't hang in limbo anymore.
Okay, so I just made more questions and answers there.
Right.
I think for me, it falls into one of two camps. Right? The person is credible, and they're murdered in their home, and then I lean toward Kirkland. Or they left their lives, and Kirkland just tried to capitalize on it.
Mm-hmm. But it is plausible that William is behind this.
Oh, for sure.
Divorce in the 50s probably works in a woman's favor.
Yes, he probably would have given her a lot of money.
So I could see where that would be really hard to part with if you have this mistress in Mexico waiting for you.
Well, not only that, like, she could have found out about the affair and it escalated and they fought.
Also, if he lost all his assets, he might be thinking to himself, well, what is she going to be interested in me for? You know what I mean? Like, if he was left with little or nothing, he risks losing his mistress, too.
Okay, and I guess here's my thing. I'm all for leaving your life being a possibility, right? But
yes.
The house was in disarray, so it was likely unplanned. To me, that rules out leaving their life. Because unless it happened, like they are a spy and they had to go now, I would assume they would have had better planning.
So let's use the word decreases the likelihood of leaving their life.
Okay. I think I'm going to lean toward they were murdered.
I think it would make for an interesting story that these were spies, Russian spies or something like that, right?
Right.
It's all the makings of something that is captivating. But I have to say that I'm with you. And while I'm not sold on the potential reasoning, like if we think that this is Kirkland and he is mad at his competitor and is of the mindset, keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yes.
Was he going to make that much more of a substantial financial gain to make it worth lives?
I don't know, but I'm in deep in the Reddit, obviously, and it says that the sheriff alluded they were spies because they were seen taking a lot of pictures.
Yes, at military bases and stuff.
They own a photo shop.
I mean, this is true, too, but they're also not from El Paso, so are they taking pictures because these are places that are relatively new to them?
I don't know. I could go down that rabbit hole, too.
Absolutely. I guess I'm inclined to think that they were murdered. I don't love the only reason I can think of for it. But until I hear, like, that his mistress eventually left the city that she lived in and her whereabouts is questionable, leading us to think that maybe they left together and maybe William killed his wife, I can't really accept that theory at this point.
I mean, I do agree that it was easier to disappear back then.
Sure.
But, again, I don't know, like, the situation at the house.
People people about pets get hung up anyway, but of course, as you'd suspect, people get really hung up on the cat. So if they left, they would not have left the cat like that. By the time they found the cat was dirty, malnourished, in really poor condition. So if that's true, and if they were interrupted, then I could see that someone either harming them in the house or taking them out. But I'm inclined to think it would be there.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, and they would ask someone like Kirkland to come in.
And I don't know why he would be getting the car repaired, but that would have to...
Unless he was just going to sell it and profit from it, knowing they weren't going to use it again.
I mean, that's a possibility.
Well, I mean, what else would he do with it?
Exactly. I don't know.
Like, if he told me he got it cleaned, I'd be like, oh, well, that makes sense. But repaired, like...
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, I think I have to land on the fact that I think they were murdered. And I would lean toward someone that benefits financially, which would be Kirkland, because of getting their business.
Yeah, and this is why time frames would help me. Like, if they had moved and been a competitor, if they had moved to El Paso, been Kirkland's competitor for the last 15 years, I would say, why at 15 years would you be disgruntled and angry? You've been managing to have a profitable business alongside of somebody else this amount of time. But if they had moved there 5 years ago, I would say, oh, he's really noticing and he's really getting furious that someone's taking his business.
I agree with you 100%.
But I guess I'm going to err on the side of that's kind of what I think, too. And another one of those cases where I think the simple answer is the obvious one.
But anything of them can be simple. Them leaving their lives could be simple if they do it often.
Being a Russian spy is not a simple explanation.
Right. Okay. Well, being a Russian spy, no.
Fair enough. So that's where I'm going to land.
Yeah. I vote we open it up.
Same. What do you guys think?
Tell us what you think and tell us if you've heard of this case and what your thoughts are.
Yeah. And if you have anything to support Russian spy, I'd be really curious so that I could get it out of my head of this, like, dramatic, salacious thing that happened, that I could wrap my head around it being plausible.
Yes. All right, guys, tell us what you think, and we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details. I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.